Chair, before you give over, I just want you to know that the DA and the EFF is linked.
I will represent you.
Thank you very much. Chair, we are, you are right, we are moving to a bit easier path of conversation from very interesting and hectic one. So, we are also
It is not a guarantee that everything in that set of financial statements is actually complete and accurate, because there is some limitations to the audit process. We are obviously not able to set each and every transaction of each and every financial statement line item. So it's on a rough basis and kind of materiality basis that we do our audit in terms of financial statements. In terms of performance information, our policy is on the usefulness as well as the reliability of the performance information. The usefulness aspect talks to your annual performance plan. It talks about how the plan was crafted, whether the targets in there are achievable, are smart in terms of whether they are well defined, they are clear for everybody to understand, and whether they are time bound and whatnot. We expect then an opinion in the management report on those particular aspects, but in terms of your audit report, it tells us material findings on whether certain indicators or targets don't match 17 groups criteria. In terms of reliability, then, subsequent to the plan phase, we also go into that indicator that we consider material. So, in during that audit, we identify which programs or objectives are key to the specific policy, and then within that program which indicators are also material. So we don't necessarily test all indicators and targets in any program, and we don't necessarily test all programs, but we do the ones that are driven by legislation, or the ones that have a certain impact on terms of public interest or service levels. So for instance, the small building fund, we would look at the programs relating to your DDSDP and your CIS and whatnot. But like I said, the focus on the administrative programs we won't look at, and we won't provide any assurance on them. Also, it doesn't necessarily mean that if we have a clean or no material findings on the performance information, that will directly result in service level. If there is certain limitations that we can't really do, that we do have in the performance information policy. For instance, we look at the relevance of the targets that are there. But if it's a certain target that should be in the we bring it to management, but it doesn't necessarily then end up in the in terms of compliance with laws and regulations, we also don't express an opinion on it. We also report a material finding in our audit report. And in terms of compliance with laws and regulations, it's not all laws and regulations. Currently, we look. Annually, we look at what are the focus areas that we want to audit, and it currently we cover the areas of procurement management, expenditure management, strategic planning, consequence management, revenue management, asset management. But even in looking at those areas, we look at specific legislation that is applicable to that department, and it's also we look at your treasury regulations, PFMA and whatnot. So these certain regulations that we look at, we agree on what the scope of the audit is in terms of what compliance regulations we're going to be looking at with the accounting officer upfront in terms of our engagement letter, and then we report material findings in terms of those. So even if our report then comes to say that there are no findings on no material findings, doesn't mean that there's no that the department has complied with every single law and regulation. It doesn't even mean that they have complied with the ones that we look at, but it means that they materially comply, so there's no significant material non-compliance for those and then in testing those three elements of our audit report, the financial statements, the performance and compliance, we also look at the internal control environment that led to those, either your financial statements being updated or your material findings on performance information and compliance. We identify the internal controls that were either not there or need to be strengthened in order to prevent those ones. And then we include those material internal control decisions. And in terms of internal control decisions, I know in the slide there in terms of on page 4 it says identification of fraud is not necessarily what we do. So the ultimate responsibility for identification of fraud lies with the accounting officer or the accounting authority and management. If we do come across a risk that indicates to be stored in the environment, then we will do more substantial procedures to ensure that we cover that risk. But our responsibility is not necessarily to identify fraud, but we do have to respond to it if it is not our intention. Then, in terms of page 5, I think we've covered the first section in terms of mandatory audit and discretionary audit. Mandatory audit is the annual audit that we do on the financial statements of forms and compliance. We don't also audit all government entities. There are certain entities that we have to audit ourselves in terms of departments, constitutional institutions, and whatnot. We have other audits in terms of your public entities that we either choose to audit or based on the risk assessment of those audits, we choose not to audit them and they are done by the private firms, but we do have some oversight over those audits. And then we have different levels of oversight depending on the risk in the environment. I'm just reading a little bit to home in terms of the small business portfolio, we audit the environment and we also audit CDA outside. In terms of then the audit outcomes itself in page 6, I'll do page 6 and 7 together. In terms of page 6, the top row is where your financial statements are without any material statements. So it might be that there were a statement they mentioned it was correct, or it might be that the submission of the financial statements to have all the material statements up front. But so if I differentiate then between a clean audit and an unqualified audit, a clean audit means that you have no material statements in the financial statements, your performance information is accurate, valid, and complete, and you didn't have any material findings in terms of the scope in legislation that we have. Then we come to an unqualified audit, what findings? Your financial statements are credible, they have no material misstatements in them, but you had direct instances of material findings either on performance information in terms of usefulness and reliability criteria, or you had material non-compliance with the legislation that is set in. Then the bottom three are where there are material misstatements in the financial statement. On the left hand side, you see you have a qualified audit. That means you have material misstatements in specific elements of the financial statement. It might be one or two or even a few more areas of your financial statement. So it might be just on your assets that you have material statements. But as you go further to the right, and you have an end audit opinion, that means that your set of financial statements, either most of the elements of your financial statement or significantly important sections of your financial statement that are important to the user, which would be the public and the comment they have, at least anyone that uses those set of financial statements. So most of the elements have material statements and you then can't actually rely on your financial statement otherwise. If you go again further to the right, you have a disclaimer of opinion. That's where we weren't able to actually give an opinion on the set of financial statements due to limitation. So we didn't get the information to actually test whether those financial statements are actually credible. So we want to avoid any of the bottom line. And then in terms of those three different opinions, they also you would then have either performance information issues, but you will definitely have compliance issues in the sense that the fact that your financial statement does not comply with the requirements in terms of what the reporting framework. You will have a compliance element, you might have other compliance elements, and you might have performance information elements. But yeah, that is in terms of the audit opinion. In terms of slide 8 then, what we're aiming for in audit system audit, which again I'm just repeating myself with, credible financial statements, no material findings on your form of information, no material non-compliance in terms of legislation. Again, there is no, we don't say that a clean audit event suddenly results in good service delivery. However, a clean audit is going to be the indicator of an environment that will produce service delivery in the sense that you have day-to-day discipline in terms of the financial reporting, in terms of the performance reporting, setting the correct target, reporting on those targets, and then complying with all necessary legislation. Slide 9 then gives us statistics in terms of fasting there, in terms of your potential in the national government entities. You'll see that there's been pretty much a stagnation. We haven't really moved towards creating number of people and number of the majority of the entities still lie in the area where they feel they have compliance issues or they have issues in terms of the performance information. You'll see there's a blue area there, there's outstanding orders. Those are the orders that complete 17-18 that have still not yet been signed. Slide 10 will give you the picture for local government. Similarly, there hasn't been a significant improvement in terms of what outcomes are very thin. In 2008-9, it was 1% in terms of clean water, and currently it was 9%. But it still hasn't moved significantly to the situation. In terms of slide 11 then, we talk about the regular expenditure. Just in terms of the definition of the regular expenditure, the regular expenditure doesn't necessarily mean money was lost in the state. It doesn't mean someone must be money must be recovered. It means that there was non-compliance with legislation and that resulted in a financial transaction. And so that financial transaction, once money is actually paid in relation to that non-compliance, it becomes irregular. So I'll make a simple example. Maybe if you need to get three quotations for any work inside of South. Because you didn't get three quotations and get an approval from, or let's say about that outcome, approval is required from National Trade Institute from that certification, or from going out and preparing the body. Because the approval wasn't obtained for the area, it just becomes not applied and it becomes a regular expenditure. But there might be some basis for not getting gone on competitive burning and you've done all your work and you made a business case for it and that business case was then approved by the county officer and value was received from that particular performance and whatnot. And there's no money lost in the state. But because you didn't get the approval from Treasury, you still not comply, still get the expenditure, but you did receive the value. So later on, we'll talk about the amendments to the PAA and you'll see the difference between irregular expenditure and material irregularity. A material irregularity that's typically going to have is where there is a financial loss. So in the same instance, you were able to detect that had you gone out on competitive value, you would have been able to get it much cheaper, or there's a potential financial loss. So that's a little bit of a differentiation between regular expenditure and material irregularity. But if you look over the past 10 years, there hasn't been, there's actually been a significant increase in the regular expenditure identified by the provincial and national government. And you see the blue line then is showing in terms of local government, there's also a significant increase. But the irregular expenditure has two elements to it. One is in terms of preventing, which is ideal, and the second element is detecting. And a significant portion of this one has been shown in the of the irregular expenditure detected over the past 10 years has been done through the audit process. So management processes then for preventing the irregular expenditure and also once it's actually incurred or detecting it hasn't always been effective. Then I'll go to page 12, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Fruitless and wasteful expenditure, there's two elements, two things that need to happen for it to be recognized as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. One, the expenditure must have been incurred in vain, so you got no value for it. And the second one is that it needs to be expenditure that's incurred, but you could have prevented it had you had the proper control in place. So if, for instance, you had to incur that expenditure, you had no other alternative to come and be kept by the system. So there must be no value obtained, and you couldn't have prevented it. So for instance, something like interest, because you paid the invoice late after 30 days or whatever, and you still have interest in terms of that. if your processors were there, you will save your input in time, you went through all of your internal processors and processing information, you would then be able to avoid your spring inference, and therefore that would then constitute a regular expenditure. Outside the implementation of expenditure. In terms of, and again, in terms of information expenditure, it's been a similar case that involves the local and the national government space. In terms of unauthorized expenditure is when you either overspend your budget, so you have a budget and you go in excess of that budget without getting the necessary approval, or you spend on things that you are not mandated to spend on. So for instance, you mandate it or you own a vehicle or whatever it is, but you're buying equipment for a motion or whatever. So it's spending that is not aligned to your mandate or overspending from your budget. So it's resulting in unauthorized expenditure. But just on that, for all public entities, if you spend in excess of your budget, that's considered breaking expenditure and unauthorized expenditure. But for departments in excess of your budget, that's you'll see a very increase from in terms of your local government in terms of unauthorized expenditure, whereas in terms of your national and national provincial government, it's been relatively the same for the past one. My slide 14 is a very concerning slide. In the sense that if you look at the red is instances of your irregular assistance to unauthorized expenditure that have not been appropriately dealt with by the accounting authority, the accounting authority. So you see in terms of all of them, the majority of them are in the red. It's either that it's not been appropriately dealt with or they take a lot of time in terms of dealing with those. Then slide 15 deals with the root cause of the graph in terms of the 10 years of financial aid, if you want to comply as well as regular expenditure, increases year on year, of which are on your annual diet. The identified root causes are related with regard to control, compliance and legislation, as well as recommendations of internal as well as external bodies. So most of the, if not all, would have a subsequent report outcome, would have an audit action plan, and a lot of the time either the action plan wouldn't be properly implemented or monitored, or it might be implemented in other ways and don't actually verify whether those actions were actually implemented. So that's in terms of the AGSA and internal audit recommendations. Then the instances obviously of competence, capacity gap, vacancy, instability, we also look at a look at in terms of being able to address the significant consequences in terms of internal controls. Unethical behavior in administration and political leaders, and leadership in action, inconsistent action in addressing persistent obstructions. So that's where you find. The last one is consequence management, which is the impact of consequence management for the absence of consequence management. So, on slide 16, showing the number of regulatory audits that we perform, and also highlights the two reports that we compile subsequently with different cycles. So after our CFA cycle with the national and provincial government, we compile a general report to consolidate all of the outcomes, the root causes, the innovation, the weaknesses in terms of that cycle, and that's our CFA general report, and then a similar report is done after the MFA cycle, so we report cycles that we also have a MFA general report. Thank you. terms of Act 17, let me highlight the ADFA's contribution to oversight. If we talk about on the left hand side, the initiative that we've implemented, and the one that I want to highlight here is the technical records review. Previously, for the memory, we've been in the environment for a while, we've done key control dashboard. So the technical records review is an enhancement of that. So what we do is we go in before the next audit, we go into the entity and we look at the numbers that we have concerned there and we take from the previous year. We also then look at other sources of that, so we see your new data such as your internal audit report, any other elements of your looking in terms of your management of the entity. So any sources that we can identify that, and we also do it in update in terms of what controls management they are going to take in terms of their food bottles or internal processes that we frequently identify. And then compile a report based on that, and that's what we then discuss with the company of the employer that we have to do in terms of progress in identifying previously identified previous assessments or appliances to increase, as well as any new assignments from the company that we have. So in terms of the portfolio committee, no longer we think a very important recommendation would be both in terms of those stages of record review as well as the high level or the high priority audit recommendation that we've identified in the previous year that track how management is actually implemented those post-audit actions and both of internal audit as well as external audit, especially the ones that then would have resulted in your negative or outside. As well as the obtaining feedback in terms of different negative from management. Slide 18, which is then also less the briefing for the oversight bodies that the AG actually conduct. So for the first one talks about the assessment of your annual performance test. So just to really go a little bit in terms of small business department, annual performance plan, what initially we did have a look at it, 2019-2020 ATP. We did have a look at it, but then subsequent after the changed dramatically, we weren't able to have a look at it as for the current year. But it is an initiative in the future years that before it actually gets stable, that we look at it and we give it to management in terms of the usefulness of the data. So that helps them to avoid findings on the usefulness and also that you need to in terms of the other than that. So just for us, the initiative. And then that, those findings that we have right now, that can take the portfolio committee in terms of those findings that they have. So it will be very useful for that. And annually, we share what outcomes with the speaker and the management in the kitchen. During the year, we are very open and welcome to the engagement with the portfolio committee in terms of sharing the changes of methods and sharing the audit with sharing updates if we've got into the monitor. So we would welcome any information to the we tend to provide briefings to the public hearing from the president. And then subsequent to both the CFMA cycle as well as the NFMA cycle, the AC does an option with the general one of the investment. And then in terms of the last one, the phone for the outcome plan is true. Similarly, what the information report like that is in the coming years. Then, in terms of the ADSA's contribution to the portfolio committee specifically, the committee gathered information by examining the report, and some of those reports are reported by the ADSA in terms of the work And then as soon as in the R process we do come and give all the outcomes for the year that has passed, it's actually finding the material in terms of the efficiencies that we've identified there, as well as the recommendations that we feel are critical to the outcomes for them for the next cycle. And those are our recommendations and this water also have to inform then in terms of the implications for an accounting officer or accounting authority or the amendments don't give the accounting officer any additional duties or any additional responsibilities. All of the responsibilities in terms of identifying for the taking corrective action in terms of whether any financial loss or harm or misuse of assets, all of those responsibilities are already in the current legislation in terms of the CFM and the regulation, what the accounting officer, what the accounting authority. cases where the accounting officer actually failed to carry out any responsibilities when we go through the process of introducing the final final element on the certificate of debt. But before you get to that process, there's a significant amount of information on what the department or what the entity or what the accounting officer needs to be able to see, not to see whether they're able to demonstrate how they take in that investment. So that whole process entails identifying the situation there, getting comments from getting the accounting officer and screening the data and response to that, which is that finding the issues are constitutional material in the event or not. If the accounting officer fails to implement the necessary recommendations, they put binding recommendations in the audit report which the accounting officer marks in the issue, and only failing is that the accounting officer has not been able to find the it doesn't put any additional responsibility. Those responsibilities are already in the respect of the legislation that we have. I think I'm already touched on this in terms of page 23, in terms of the 16 other teams that we selected from the national perspective and the 9 other teams that we have from the The last page is in terms of the use of information in audit report on material inequity. I think it's aimed at making sure that I think if you go a little bit back and you saw how many instances of inequity which are handled in the answer. So it's about making sure that those critical findings or those findings that have impact on the development or the public access have the attention that they deserve. So it's just in the actual standards of the situation. That is the role of the portfolio of the future. So we have title and what is critical.
I'm saying here with us and with us.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Just one comment and one question. The first is, so the comment is, it looks like to my eye, maybe the scope of the briefing to the AG for the session was very specific. But I think one missing element in the presentation is that comprehensive risk assurance model that the AG always tables with committees. It's really useful for especially new members to understand, connect the dots in the whole ecosystem. So not just the AG's role, but audit committees, internal audits, and how that ongoing communication between the AG and the audit committees and so on is meant to kind of boost that. So just a note on that to say it is a useful framework for the members to understand how the bigger picture works. But my small question might have been covered because I missed the presentation on that slide. But on slide 9 and 10, there's that spike in outstanding audits from the 16-17 financial year to 17-18. Are you able to perhaps explain or sort of shed light on why that was? Because that's quite a notable sort of shift in trends.
Thank you. I think that was the only hand.
Ah, what?
I heard that impression hand. What's your one hand on top? Okay.
Thank you.
But don't forget the interview.
I'll be very short. DJ, I was also wanting to check. Let me first welcome the presentation. I think I've learned a lot from the presentation. We detailed some planning out the needs to go through. I'm noting a high spike in 2009 till 13 of irregular expenditure. Maybe you can tell us why, what you think, why was that spike so high? And then also, there was now of recent, there was a scandal by KPMG. You audit some state entities and KPMG does that. Do you also audit the external auditors so that we can just understand the scope of what the Auditor General does? Because you play that oversight role on public entities. So let me just take a look at the one. Let's see.
I'll internally audit external auditors. So for what we have started doing now, for big Schedule 2 entities, we started to participate more in the government structure, because especially those that are audited by private firms under monitoring is based on that. When we say we attend the audit committee, there are also
one of the gun instructors that are external. And with their group, we engage with them and say, look, these are the risks we see, we complain, we see, oh, what about this, what about this? Because we're all professionals, most people of the same profession. So that's how we are navigating that space, which we have also our business also some students, but we also have a first SAE now, so we're moving towards that direction that we consider for the capacity of the Auditor General not to deliver the risks.
Thank you.
Maybe
follow-up question or five?
Thank you.